Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University, with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. I have a wonderful show today for you. I have a wonderful show. Today we're going to learn about the dangers of head trauma. Now, if you've never had head trauma, this show is still for you. And you're going to see, I'm going to weave this concept of head trauma into many, many principles. Wonderful educational piece this morning. Now, how many of you, and you got to think back sometimes to when you were little, have been hit in the head or had neck trauma, whiplash, anything from the neck up that's affected you for a week? But when you look back on it, you say, years later, you know, ever since that head trauma, that neck trauma, I've never been the same. You got to listen real good to this show today. And that includes, and this is the point, everybody's part of this. That can go all the way back to head trauma in the birth canal, which you may not be aware that you had, but which is really and truly affecting you in a very deep way. It may be that little fall you took out of the crib many, many years ago. It may be a forceps scar that you forgot about. And you're not thinking about head trauma, I'm sure, in terms of plastic surgery. You're not thinking of head trauma in terms of the fact that you're missing two or three teeth and you have bridges in your mouth that don't really fit. So you really have to think of perfection. Never a trauma to the head, a physical blow to the head, perfect teeth, no tension up in the upper cervicals. And if you can build on that ideal sort of perfect person from the neck up, then maybe you haven't had head trauma. But if not, this applies to you. First point, Frank Netter. His name is Frank Netter. Get on the website, get on Google, and look up the name Frank Netter, Atlas of Human Anatomy. Strong suggestion on my part, especially if you like my archives. Get on the archives, open the book, and look at this Michelangelo of a medical doctor named Frank Netter, who years ago revolutionized anatomy for medical doctors. And that filtered on down to the osteopaths and to the chiropractors and to the acupuncturists and to the general public. He was the Michelangelo, the Picasso of anatomy. And when he drew a picture, it was so well done that it was almost as good as dissection. Not quite, but almost as good as dissection itself. Because I'm going to make references today to things that are inside your brain, and you got to have the pictures. And I'll describe them in that radio is the theater of the mind. But if you can get to the pictures, it's even better. Now, up in your skull are three important glands. The first one's the pituitary, and I want you to take your finger, and I want you to put your finger right between your eyebrows. If you go back about 2-3 inches from where your finger is between your eyebrows, sits a gland called the pituitary gland. And you can get the Netter book and see. And in a week, I'll have pictures on the website. This pituitary gland, if you go back from your forehead point there about 2-2.5 inches or so, this is going to vary, right, depending on the size of your head, the shape of your skull, but generally in that department. And then you just go up a couple of millimeters, hit another gland above the pituitary, and that's called the hypothalamus. And if you go back a little bit from the hypothalamus, you're going to hit the pineal gland. In the center of your brain are three glands that control the entire show. you could get lost there. It's a portal to another dimension. It's an area that we barely understand, and we've been studying it from as long back as we can remember science. And that's the relationship between the pituitary, the hypothalamus, and the pineal gland. So you put your finger on your forehead, right between your eyebrows. You go back about 2 inches, and that's your pituitary gland. And just a little bit above it is your hypothalamus gland. And just back towards your back of your head is the pineal gland. And if you connect those 3 points, you can do this. You can visualize this. You've got a triangle. In that triangle is the whole of it all. Every single thing that goes on in your body, everything you call aging, everything you call prevention against disease, everything you call illumination is within those 3 spaces. I'm going to show you pictures of them on my website, but if you get that Netter book and you look at this stuff, you will get drawn in just as I did 20 years ago. I've dissected at least 50 or 60 brains thoroughly. It was one of the most fascinating things I ever did in school. And it's given me an insight into really what we call health that I think not enough people share, and so thus the show to you. Now, when we say neuroendocrine system, and you know that word from general science, the word neuroendocrine, neuro as in nervous system, endocrine as in glandular system, the relationship between the neuroendocrine system, the relationship between these three glands, borders on the word light, magnetism, electromagnetic control of all the chemistry in your body. So if we're going to be blunt and low level about our health, we're going to think of health in the material plane. This is a cell, and this is how we feed the cell with good nutrition, and then the cell gets better. And relative to what I'm going to put forth today, that's almost nonsense. There's a hierarchy there that respects what I'm talking about today that makes the chemistry of the cell almost meaningless. It's the electromagnetic control of the cell. And that liaison, that gap between the pure electromagnetic and the biochemistry of the cell, the gap between the two, the bridge between the two, the language between the two, is in the pituitary, hypothalamic, and pineal axis in the body. It's a portal to the magnetic field. And these three glands define, in our most powerful, potent way, the word neuroendocrine. So we say your health is under neuroendocrine control. And this insight has fostered many a different science: cranial osteopathy, chiropractic. Two very, very developed fields that thoroughly and deeply respect this. But if you take Chinese medicine back to its roots, it was very aware of this. Now, in the Netter book, and I'll define this for you as best I can right now, is the concept of the meninges. You know this in your daily experience from the word meningitis. When you were little, or if you have little kids, there's always a concern about bacterial or viral meningitis. And bacterial or viral meningitis is an inflammation of a very special tissue in the body called the meninges. Now, I want you to picture the brain and then this long piece of nerve tissue called the spinal cord coming off the brain. I just want you to picture that in your mind. It's like a staff. A staff is a long stick, and it's got a head on the top. That head on the top is your brain, and that long stick is your spinal cord. And around that is a very tough, plastic-like covering to the brain and the spinal cord, to the head of the staff and the staff. It's kind of like a sheath. That sheath, that tent that covers the staff, is called the meninges. And the most important part of that for this show today is the dural, D-U-R-A-L, the dural tissue, the dura mater. Dura mater in Latin means tough mother. It's a sense the protective coating, or the in the sense that that's what a mother would do. It protects and coats the brain and the spinal cord. And that dura mater is part of the meninges. And between, and this is what's fascinating, between or underneath the dural tissue and the brain, in between it is the cerebrospinal fluid. There's a fluid. So it's as if you took a staff with a ball on the top of it and a long stick attached to it, and you covered it in a plastic sheath, and then you injected water into that sheath so that the staff floated inside. The brain floats inside the dural sheath. The brain and the spinal cord are floating. They are floating. And the arterial supply into the brain, you guys know there's arteries and blood supply into the brain. That arterial supply into the brain pumps something called the ventricles of the brain, like the ventricles of the heart, the left ventricle and right ventricle of the heart, the brain inside your brain. You should see this in Netter, and I'll get it up on the site. The ventricles of the brain beat like a heart, but they don't beat to the rhythm of the heart. They beat to the cranial rhythm. And these ventricles, as they pump, they push the cerebrospinal fluid all up around the brain, underneath the dural tissue, and up the center of the spinal cord. So that as these ventricles pump, and remember, this show is going to go to the dangers of head trauma. So you're going to see some real important hookups here. As that cerebral spinal fluid flows, as the ventricles of the brain pump, as this fluid, if you were a little person in a boat, and in that boat you were in that cerebral spinal fluid, you would be going down the spinal cord, up the spinal cord, all around the brain, inside the brain, down the center of the spinal cord. There would be this whole journey. Cerebrospinal flow. Have you ever had a dural tap? Any of you that have a dural tap? What always comes with a dural tap? A terrible headache. Why? Because when they draw cerebrospinal fluid out of your spinal cord area, when they draw it out, why are they drawing it out? They want to see if it's infected. Did the infection go into the cerebrospinal fluid? Oh, we're going to have to do a dural tap. Let's suck out that nice liquid and study it for virus or bacteria. Mrs. Smith, your daughter's got bacterial meningitis, viral meningitis. And what follows the next day after you get a dural tap? A terrible headache. The most awesome debilitating headache known to man. One of them at least. Behind the cluster headache. Worse than the migraine is the dural headache. Why? Because when you pull that water out, the cerebral spinal fluid, it's a clear, transparent fluid. It's called the milk of the brain. You know, the brain doesn't have a lymphatic system. Did you know that? There's no lymph to the brain. The brain does not drain via lymph. It drains via cerebrospinal fluid, the milk of the brain. And this milk flows around, and that's what we call the cerebrospinal flow. And that's what creates the cranial rhythm. But it's all generated by the pumping of these ventricles. Now, guess what influences the pumping of the ventricles? The bite. So we're going to tie a lot of pieces together here today. The bite. When you look at your bite, your teeth, the minute you miss a tooth, you alter the bite. And that alters the rhythm. If you have a bridge, you alter the bite, and that alters the rhythm. If you have an implant, you alter the bite, and therefore that alters the rhythm. If you're just missing teeth, if you have crowns, this is why teeth are so important. This is why I did my show on teeth. Always look at the teeth. The doctor always looks at the teeth of the patient. teeth are health. Why are teeth health? Because teeth, if they're all there and the bite is balanced, when you bite down, there is a vector, a line of force that goes from the teeth to the maxillary bones. That's the two bones on the side of your nose, up to the bone behind your forehead. That point I was talking about, that's the ethmoid bone, the ethmoid, E-T-H-M-O-I-D. And that bone is connected to the sphenoid bone, sphenoid, S-P-H-E-N-O-I-D, sphenoid. The sphenoid bone from the bite to the maxilla to the ethmoid to the sphenoid bone. You know what sits in the sphenoid bone? The pituitary gland. Your high centers for your neuroendocrine system sit inside the sphenoid bone. The pituitary does. It sits in what you call the sella turcica. The sella turcica is Latin for Turkish saddle. It's a very deep saddle, a Turkish saddle. And that pituitary just sits in that groove inside your brain, inside the sphenoid bone, affected by the maxilla, affected by the bite. So you pump when you bite. If it's symmetrical, you pump at the right angles of force. The sphenoid bone, you pump the pituitary. The pituitary pumps the hypothalamus. The pineal sits behind the pituitary and the hypothalamus, and if you pump it well enough, if you can get the right dance going, if you can get the right rhythm going, if you can get the right flow of cerebral spinal fluid going, if the ventricles of the brain are pumping correctly, if everything is moving in synchronicity, at some point the pineal gland will begin to open up its energetic flow. This is science. This isn't esoteric language here. This is hard science. This is what happens. If you go into the pineal gland, and what does the pineal gland do? It does everything. So let's keep it simple. But it's got granules in it. It has granules in it. And if it vibrates correctly, if the pineal gland vibrates correctly, and this little gland, this little nip of a gland, if it vibrates correctly, these granules break up. They degranulate. When they degranulate, when whatever in them, whatever those granules are about, begin to dissolve, if the gland is vibrating right, something very special happens to your physiology, something beyond the normal physiology, something that truly, I assure you, you pray for when you pray. And light is discharged. Light will be discharged in conjunction with that electromagnetic field going from the brain down the spine. And that light hits the organs. And that's what organizes your chemistry. That's a mouthful. That's how important the bite is. The bite is one really important aspect of what allows symmetry through the maxilla, through the ethmoid bone, into the pituitary, up to the hypothalamus, back to the pineal. And if that's just normal, if you're just a healthy person, if you're a healthy 15-year-old athlete, and you've been spared traumas and tooth loss and the rest of it, this is why you're so healthy. Because that electromagnetic field generated from the bite into the high centers of the brain, into what we call the neuroendocrine control center, is what's generating a magnetic field that bathes. It enamors all the cells of your body. There isn't one function in the cell, all of which are occurring at light speed, all of which added up occur to more than all the stars in all the skies, umpteen trillions, exponential numbers. Under the eyeball of the hypothalamic pituitary pineal axis. And we know this. And one of the things that shuts this down is head trauma. So this does mean you. And I hope, as some of you have told me, when I do a show, sometimes people say, I love your show, Medici, but you know, you did this show on this subject and it didn't apply to me. I hope you didn't make that mistake. Because everybody suffers from this. The aging process, the normal aging process, which we want to minimize or eliminate our perception of, but as you notice, every year or two, your head moves further and further and further. If you look at grandma when she's 20, the line between her head and her neck and the beginning of her shoulders is straight. If you look at grandma from the side, that line is straight. And every so many 10 years, she's hunched a little more. So by the time she's 70 or 80, the tip of the nose is way forward, the head has come way forward, and the buttocks has gone way backwards. So the spine is no longer straight. Up in the neck and head, we say we all, at a certain point, start to suffer from anterior head carriage. The head just keeps dropping forward and forward and forward. And do you know what this does? It shuts down the cranial rhythm. And as you get older, the teeth start to suffer, and that shuts down the cranial rhythm. So when you look at that 70 or 80-year-old, and you see perfect symmetry in the mouth, and you see the head and the neck as a straight line, they've got an infinitely better edge on what we call aging. And if you really pay attention to your health, and in the United States, we want to take this concept into the next century, into the latter half of this century, and certainly we're going to need to, you can open up those magnetic fields. Now, this is science. So get that one straight, my friends. This is a very real thing. When you see a patient as a doctor, and I'll give you an example, they take herbs, and the herbs don't seem to work. Well, you hear this on Dr. Marshall's show as interference fields. Head traumas and teeth problems are costly. This is that topic made more comprehensive. And you'll note these people. And they'll say, I take herbs, but I just don't get an effect. And this is the point. You can feed the herb. You can feed the food into the body. But that doesn't mean the cell is going to know what to do with it. Just because you have a sense of how to offer the cell the chemistry it needs, there's no reason to think that the cell's going to understand how to assimilate it. The digestive system in the small intestine, the intestinal villi, there's no reason to think that they'll absorb what you're feeding it. And this is where dollars are spent. And this is where energy is lost. And this is where the clock just ticks and ticks, and it's 2 years, 5 years, 8 years, and your chronic issue is still chronic. So, quick review. Put your finger between your eyebrows. Back about 2 inches is your pituitary gland in the cella turcica of the sphenoid bone. Come up a couple of millimeters and you're in the hypothalamus gland, the second gland. Go back a bit or so and you're in the pineal gland. Those three centers are what we call the crown, the high intelligence of the brain. They define the neuroendocrine system. And they're vibrating. And they're vibrating to the bite. And they're vibrating to the ventricular system of the brain that's moving all this fluid around and around and around. And this brain is vibrated by the dural tissue, the skin of the brain. And that dural tissue is vibrating off the bite. Symmetry in the bite from the maxilla to the pituitary, from the maxilla to the ethmoid bone to the sphenoid bone. And this all goes down the tubes with head trauma. What kind of head trauma? Any kind. Car accident head trauma, tooth head trauma, birth trauma, clenching your jaw at night trauma, clenching and grinding, sporting accidents. And what happens to head trauma that I want to point out is, I want you to picture, just do it like this. Something hits you in the forehead. And it cocks your head back. And then your head comes forward. So think of whiplash. You're driving at 20 miles an hour. You go into a tree. Your head goes, what? Forward, and then it jerks backward. or sometime you get hit in the front of the head and you jerk backward and then you come forward. That jerking back and forward, or forward and back, or clenching at night that we call head trauma, will compress. So now we're going to move to something else. It will compress the occiput, the first cervical vertebra, and the second cervical vertebra. The occiput. In the back of your head, if you tap the back of your head, you're on the occipital bone. That occipital bone, at the bottom of it, just behind your neck, those deep grooves, I've mentioned this before. What point is that in Chinese medicine? It's called gallbladder 20. That groove in there, up where the upper cervicals are, that gets compressed. The minute it gets compressed, it crushes the vagus nerve. The vagus nerve flows through that area. Now, the vagus nerve is one of 12 cranial nerves. It's cranial nerve 10. Hope I remembered my neurology there. It's cranial nerve 10, the vagus nerve. That nerve controls the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system. Now, I hope that's not a new term to you guys. It controls the electrical flow from the brain via cranial nerve 10, via the vagus nerve. It controls that outflow through the autonomic nervous system, both sympathetic and parasympathetic fibers. What does that mean? There's an electrical flow out of the brain through a nerve, and it gets crushed with head trauma. It gets compressed with head trauma. It doesn't send the current out well with head trauma. Now, the purpose of that nerve is to speed up and slow down the organ systems. Speed up and slow down the organ systems. Make the organ systems work and make the organ systems relax. So let's talk about the cranial nerve, the vagus nerve to the heart. When you stand up and you run, your heart beats faster. You don't tell your heart to beat faster. That's because of the sympathetic fibers to the heart coming off the vagus nerve. And then there's what? There's the parasympathetic fibers to the heart. Now, what are they about? The parasympathetic fibers tell the heart to slow down. If you tell your heart to speed up and nothing tells your heart to slow down, your heart just keeps speeding up. And when it does, we call that sympathetic dominant. That's no good. You burn out fast in a sympathetic dominant state. Your organs fry. Your organs get stupid. They don't know what to do. Your chemistry starts to suffer immeasurably when you get compression up there in the upper cervicals if it compromises the vagus nerve. Now, that compressed vagus nerve is compressed and stays compressed because the bones up there stay compressed. And why do they stay compressed? Because they fibrosed. There is a buildup of scar tissue, of connective tissue, of fascial tissue. And I hope you're sick of hearing me say fascia. Then I'm doing a good job. If you're looking blank, then you only have one excuse because you're new to the show. And so you are forgiven. But if you've listened to the show regularly, you got to know what this is. If not, get the Netter book. Google up images of fascia. I'm going to put a surgery. It's a YouTube clip I'm going to attach to my site this week. I'll put it in the Medici Library, and you can watch a surgery. And in that surgery, you can see all this connective tissue called the fascia. It's actually a surgery on a prostate gland. And to get to it, you have to cut through the skin and then all this connective tissue, layer after layer after layer. And the guy's in there with his hot scissors. And he's just knocking away all these layers of connective tissue like it doesn't mean anything. He's making a massive area of scarring, which is a blessing if you have to do a surgery. Question is, did we have to do it? But the point is, in surgeries, in physical traumas. So think of your facelift. Think of that glorious day where you just said, I got to do this. And I'm not criticizing it. That's a personal decision. No one has the right to criticize that. But you have to understand the consequences of that. And that's what education is. And when you look at this YouTube clip on cutting through the endopelvic fascia, you'll see what any surgery is about, cutting through layer and layer and layer and layer. Now, you don't have to cut through layers to get adhesions. You just have to have chronic, nonstop irritation to those places. And that irritation can come from anything. It can come from an imbalanced bite. It can come from a cesarean. It can come from a difficult birth, meaning the baby coming down the birth canal that isn't coming down so correctly. It can come from falling out of the crib. It can come from that little fight you had when you were 4 years old. It can come when something fell on your head. It can come as an adult from a little fender bender. And depending who you are, it doesn't have to be a lot of head trauma. Because some people don't recover well. Some people don't bounce back that easily. So you can get these problems anywhere. And what it does is it starts to fuse or fibrose the base of the occiput. That's one of your skull bones to the joint it articulates with in the first cervical vertebra, the atlas. And that first cervical vertebra will fuse via its facet joint into the second cervical vertebra. So you have this web of intricate, dehydrated, toxic, dried out, gooey, sticky fascia. And that's why you're always pulling on your neck or getting that afternoon headache or wishing somebody would just cup their hands underneath your head while you're face up, even in your living room couch, and just pull the back of your head gently. Because you want to open that up. Your intuitive self, your intuitive faculty, your experiential intelligence, greater than your analytical mind, is telling you intuitively, do that. It feels good. Something good happens. You bet something good happens. That opens up that cranial flow. It opens up that occipital. It opens up the electrical flow of the vagus nerve to your organ systems, all of them. But if your bite is off, you're going to have more trouble, and everything I said that adds into it. Now, this is not news to all the healing arts. Chiropractic, cranial osteopathy, Pilates, all the insights into stretching, all the massage therapy from Rolfing to Heller work to just good old deep tissue, all these fields understand this. Dentists understand this. TMJ specialists understand this. This understanding is absolutely critical to all the structural professions. And dentistry, orthodontics, TMJ specializations are all structurally focused entities, such as chiropractic in addition and cranial osteopathy, etc. Now, let me tell you a little story. At one time, osteopathy, your osteopath, lived for this type of understanding. At the turn of the century, when Andrew Still, one of the founders of osteopathy, had an idea that compression of blood flow to any body part and systemically would create disease. That the idea behind preventing disease was to make sure that as you aged, it didn't compromise blood flow. That was where osteopathy started. And there were guys like Fulford, all the way up to John Upledger, all the way up to Hugh Milne, that have carried the torch for 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, 100, 110, 120 years or so. But the whole idea with cranial osteopathy was that if off head trauma, the rhythm I was referring to earlier, the bones of the skull, all of the dozens of bones of the skull, if they started to get glued together, if they started to fibrose, it would shut down vagal outflow, the outflow of the vagus nerve to the organ systems. And the osteopaths stood strong. Except for political reasons, they didn't fare so well. And so what they decided to do way back when is kind of merge, in a sense, with the AMA. They made a deal. And the deal was simply, we're not going to make these outlandish claims like many of the chiropractors were accused of. And in return, they would kind of fuse into the more mainstream medical system. And Andrew Still's vascular blood flow theory, it started to get pushed to the side. So today, by 1990, 2000, your osteopath doesn't generally, as much as in the beginning, resonate with this concept. But you see, there was a guy named John Upledger. There's another name, John Upledger. John Upledger was an osteopath. John Upledger was a neurosurgeon. John Upledger was participating in a surgery once where a person's spinal cord was laid open during a surgery. And he noticed that the spinal cord had a rhythm to it. Just as he noticed during brain surgeries, the brain had a rhythm to it. You understand, when you do a surgery and you look at a live person on a table, opened up under minimal amounts of anesthesia, and you're looking at, in this case, the brain and the spinal cord, they dance, they wave. They're not static. It's not like you're looking at a picture. They're dancing. They're vibrating. They have a rhythm. And Upledger noticed that this rhythm that they had was not the rhythm of the heart. It wasn't that the heartbeat was creating some sort of rhythm in the brain and spinal cord. And he noticed that the breath, the rhythm of the breath, was not what was creating the rhythm of the brain and spinal cord. And that was huge. That was a illumination. It was a reorientation to what was always known, and that is that the brain and the spinal cord have their own rhythm. And that's where the osteopaths really were at the turn of the century. And this guy Upledger in the 60s, he kind of brought that back. So today you have many, 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 many of your osteopaths, and they are basically gatekeepers in the allopathic healthcare system. You go to see them at wherever, at Kaiser perhaps, and they're your GP. They're the main gatekeeper. They're very, very Western. But then you have other osteopaths like John Upledger, like Hugh Milne, like the guys that developed from the work of Fulford, and originally Andrew Still. And these guys think the way we're talking about today. So there was a trade-off, and this lost a lot of mainstream. You don't go to the doctors today and have them tell you that your migraine headaches, that your detached retina, that your teeth are falling out, that you've just lost your hearing suddenly because your cranial rhythms. I had a woman about a year ago or so. She was in a car accident, the retina detached. Four surgeries later, they couldn't attach the retina. Long before the car accident, long before the detached retina, she had had the kind of head traumas that I assure you fused every bone of her skull and upper cervical spine into one big lump. This is a big deal. It's not a little deal. This should be mainstream medicine, not some little side thing that often gets misunderstood as esoteric jargon. This is hard science. So go to your osteopath. Find an osteopath that looks into the cranial stuff. Now, the chiropractors, that name you know better. I'll guarantee you, if you're listening to this show right now, for every person that's heard of an osteopath, there are 100 that heard of a chiropractor. The chiropractors, of which I am one, they, at the turn of the century, pushed this idea that it wasn't so much the blood, not that they disagreed with this, it wasn't the blood supply that gave the body health. It was the nerve supply. And of the two, blood and nerve, they're both important. Neurovascular is the word. And you don't really say one's more important than the other. They're both absolutely critical for health. But the chiropractors chose, because of the way it was birthed, they chose nerve supply. So that nerve supply in the neck to the organs, you know, all of you or many of you have had chiropractic adjustments and you've been to chiropractors and they adjust your neck and your mid back and your low back and they give you physical therapy, interferential current, ultrasound, massage therapy, TENS units, men's units, all sorts of different things revolving around musculoskeletal ache and pain. But what you don't know is in the 1940s, one of the most enigmatic, charismatic pioneers of chiropractic was a guy named B as in boy, J as in John, Palmer, as in Arnold Palmer, B.J. Palmer. He was Harry Truman's chiropractor. And B.J. Palmer and his work and his focus and his dedication is the only reason, well, not the only, but it's one of the main reasons chiropractic is here today. Because back then, if you practiced chiropractic, you were an absolute witch. And many of them were sent to jail for practicing medicine without a license. And many of them, you know, admittedly made claims that were a little ridiculous. But my point is that this upper cervical spine, where you get these interference fields, where you get fibrosis that crushes your vagus nerve, that shuts off your cranial rhythms, that's really very related to your teeth, that's very related to grinding your teeth, clenching your teeth, not liking your life, being angry at things. Those upper cervicals, the chiropractors in the 40s under B.J. Palmer were declaring if they could just open up the flow of energy through the cervical spine into the body, you could heal anything. Now, they pushed it too far. I mean, that's my opinion, and I'm a chiropractor. I can, I think, intelligently make that statement. They went a little too far, but I'll tell you, bang for the buck, if I was going to go after one place in a human body to straighten out, to put back correctly, to give somebody an edge on their health, it would be there, the upper cervical spine, for exactly this reason. That's a lot. Now, myself, at least three times a week, I lie face up on a massage table. I have one of my therapists wrap some sort of a scarf towel-like creation around my head and neck, and they pull my head. Cervical decompression. Cervical decompression. It's not that twisty stuff that the chiropractors do. It's just pulling gently, or more than gently. And in fact, a week ago or so, I had one of my clients up on an inversion table. Only he was upside down on that inversion table, hanging at a 180-degree angle. And there was something tied to his head. And his spine was stabilized, and we pull the head. And the upper cervical spine gives off these great cracks. Now, certainly, if you have an inversion table, do not try this at home. Do not do this. This is a complicated moment. But you get the point. There are many variations of what we call cervical decompression. And today we have cervical decompression tables. We have decompression tables. Spinal decompression. Well, that inversion table that we often talk about on the other shows, that inversion table, all right, is another attempt to get you to decompress your entire spine. But then they have spinal decompression tables. It's not an inversion table. You lie on your back like when you sleep at night and they strap you into something. And orthopedic surgeons use it and chiropractors use it and physical therapists use it. And they gently, gradually apply enormous levels of decompressive force to hopefully separate that spine. And if they do it right, and in my opinion, this is where they just don't understand a few things, they can get the upper cervical spine, occiput C1, C2, to crack. But through separation, not twisting, not shear, meaning cross-sectional force, just decompression, they're just pulling. And you can do this for yourself on a very modified scale, of course. But you and your loved ones One person can lie face up. The next person puts their hands underneath the occiput and just pulls back gently. There's no law against that. That's a simple thing to do, and it feels good. And you'll get the sense of what this decompression actually feels like. But you can see there's been so much in medicine focused on this concept, and all these reasons are the reasons why. That's big. Now, here's the key. We're leading to crescendo here. Here's the key. When you get structural work, meaning when you get a chiropractic adjustment, when you go on an inversion table, when you get spinal decompression, when you go to your osteopath and he works you from the neck up, when you go to your massage therapist and they work the back of the neck into the suboccipital space. Has anybody ever had a massage therapist like a Rolfer or a Heller worker stick their fingers in the mouth and do an internal pterygoid adjustment? These things are done routinely. Irregardless of what you do in structural work, what money you pay, there is an effect on a scale of 0 to 100. And so I'll just do this theoretically. How come some people get a big effect and some people get a medium effect and some people say, I wasted my money? Oh, I went to that chiropractor. He tried to adjust my neck. It didn't work. I like that other chiropractor. He does a soft touch adjustment. He doesn't crack my neck, but I don't really feel that much better. Or most common, I get a result, but it lasts a day. I get a result, but it lasts a week if I'm lucky. I did get that one result, that one massage, that one adjustment that was so much better than any other adjustment I've ever had. But now when I do it, I feel good and then it's back to normal. Why do some people get the prodigious effect and thus support the claim that these things are worth spending your money on and others don't? I'll tell you why in a nutshell. The whole point of this radio show for 34 weeks now is to illuminate this point. And that is that when you do a cervical manipulation, when you do a structural adjustment, it's not just the technique of the practitioner. It's not just their skill that determines the result. It's just how adjustable you come in. It's how manipulable you are. You, the patient, looking for help, to interference fields creating debilitating pain and symptoms. It's how you come into the table and what you're composed of that has a massive effect on the efficacy of that therapy. That's a lot to hear. And what you are is four things. So you've already heard this one, the rule of four. You are the rule of four. You are, what you bring to that table is your blood chemistry, your nutritional chemistry, your balances, your imbalances, your deficiencies, and your excesses. You are your psyche. How much of your emotions you're holding in your tissue. You are your flexibility. How much length do you have in those muscles, ligaments, and tendons that somebody is with good intention trying to manipulate? You are also your adhesions, your scars, your interference fields, synonyms for the same thing. You are those four things. You are blood chemistry. You are biomechanics or flexibility. You are your psycho-emotional self. And you are your physical scars from physical traumas. You are those four things. And when you come and lie down and ask for manipulation, the efficacy, how good that doctor or therapist does their job, is largely determined by the amount of blockage you come in with those four variables. This confuses the entire holistic healthcare system. This is astounding to me that it does. And for as much as I think my fellow practitioners as well as the public, will agree that this makes sense. When you watch people work with this tomato, when you watch them work with their concept, this concept, this is where we really see what the potholes are all about. Not enough people under the hand of a structural technician, doctor, are being told they have to maybe cleanse for the structural adjustment to work. Not enough people seeing nutritionists are being told there's psyche here and you've got to resolve psyche before maybe you spend so much money on your herbs or in conjunction with it. There's not enough prioritization. The public want to know where to work. What is the best time, money, and energy expenditure in your life as it relates to health? What's the best way you can allocate your time, energy, and money? That's what your healthcare provider has to do. That's what you call navigation. That's why I do this show, to give you the education so you can navigate your way and appropriate your time, your money, and your energy more intelligently. That is the future of holistic medicine. That is truly the future, and an integrated model so that you actually know how to work with these concepts. So, we said a mouthful today, did we not? I think it calls for an encore. One more, let's put this together. Let's review the show. Everybody's got what I'm talking about today. Head trauma. Nobody doesn't have it. You don't have to be bumped on the head. You just have to live life. Just have to turn your neck 1,000 times a week. And finally, the adhesions begin. And it relates very closely to a pictorial guide that you can get with an anatomy book called Frank Netter. And in that book, or any image on Google, you can look at the pituitary gland, which if you put your finger between your eyebrows is about 2 inches back. And just above it is the hypothalamus gland. And just behind that is the pineal gland. And the hypothalamus, the pituitary, and the pineal gland make a triangle. And in that triangle is the core of the neuroendocrine system. That means the electrochemical messages that these glands give out and receive, that they are receptive to and give out, defines your health. They are the magic wand, those three glands, that send vibrations and intelligences and directives, orders, things for your body to do. They are the brain of your cell, the cell in your little toe. And they are part of another system called the cranial system. And the cranial system is part of another system. It's called the ventricular system of the brain. And between the ventricular system, the cranial system, and this neuroendocrine center, you define under that dome the singularly most important variable defining health. And the cranial system ties into the bite, which if it's symmetrical, sends energy lines up to the brain, pumping the ventricular system, moving the cerebral spinal fluid, vibrating the bones of the brain. And if all that works, the occiput C1 and C2 send the vagus nerve fields into your organ systems. And head trauma stops that. Thus, the emphasis in chiropractic, in osteopathic, in massage therapy to open that up, the suboccipital interference field. Now, that time permitted is the show in one. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. We'll see you next week. Call the office, 949-873-2127. Get to the website, straighttalk.cc. Come to the school. Ciao.
You You've been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.